I knew about the project because I knew that it was a project in the ether, and I knew some of the attachments were brilliant people, and I was just, as a movie fan, excited to see the movie. I didn't know I'd get to star in it and work with Clint. That was pretty insane.
That was the star of the new movie directed by Clint Eastwood called Richard Jewell. And I'm Neil Rosen, and welcome to another edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined, as always, by Bill McCuddy.
Yes, you can't stop me from coming.
And Bill Bregoli.
That was Paul Walter Hauser.
Yes.
Who's your, you know this guy, McCuddy?
Well, I met him during the making of I, Tonya. They did all those Peggy Siegel lunches and stuff. And I ran into him like 3 or 4 times, and we got sat next to each other a couple of times. And he's a super nice guy. I mean, he's a very talented actor within, and he would not be upset with if I said this, within a very narrow band. I mean, he's a schlubby looking like regular guy, and like Jonah Hill. And he's made a name for himself after I, Tonya.
So why don't you tell everyone...
He kind of stole I, Tonya.
So since we did a television show today, Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen, that airs next week.
Imagine that we're giving
CUNY,
that a pitch.
And you did, as I call it, the lead on Richard Jewell. Why don't you tell everybody what the movie is about?
Well, I think everyone knows who Richard Jewell is. He's from 1996's Atlanta Olympics. He was the guy that they said maybe was a hero and then turned into the guy that may have planted the bomb. And this is a movie about a guy who's not traditionally good looking, who wouldn't normally be a lead in a movie. And because of Olivia Wilde, who worked for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Kathy Scruggs, he becomes the guy that the FBI is going after. In this case, John Hamm, who's playing the FBI agent that allegedly Kathy Scruggs slept with. Now there's a lawsuit saying maybe she did or maybe she didn't.
That newspaper is demanding an apology. They're saying that she didn't sleep with anybody in order to get the information from the FBI agent.
Yes, and of course she has conveniently died. She died at age 42, sadly. So they can't ask her. So this is a retelling of a story, and what I didn't say on the show today was because there hasn't been a movie made about Richard Jewell because nobody really cared about Richard Jewell, is that they decided to, in this case, Clint Eastwood, to revisit this story. And it's a very, I'm going to say by the numbers, which is going to make it sound like not a good movie. I think it's a fine movie, but whether or not you like it or not depends on, I don't know, whether you think this is a story that needed to be told.
Well,
I will say before you chime in that there were things when I watched the movie that I forgot about. I forgot that he was innocent, for example, and I think that's not giving anything away. I think that there was the feeling that because he was this not attractive guy that he must...
Naive.
And that he had a couple of jobs in security that he had failed at or been fired from, that he was probably the guy who planted the bomb. And it was a big national story. And
the big story was that he originally was the hero because he's the one that reported this to authorities, and that there were hundreds of people's lives saved because he said there's a bomb in this Centennial Park in the Atlanta Olympics in 1996. And then, right, as you said, McCuddy, he becomes this – he goes from hero to terrorist, number one terrorist suspect, because, we see in the movie early on in his past that he's kind of a – he's this frustrated security guard that wants to be a cop. I said on the TV show today, he's kind of a little like Seth Rogen in Armed and Dangerous or Kevin James in Mall Cop. He wants to be more important than he is. You know, he gets fired from a job where he was like the security guard on a college campus because he wants to like throw all these kids in jail for like talking too loud at night or something. I mean, he's got on a power trip and he's messed up. What you didn't say is the best thing about the movie is the fact that Sam Rockwell, who plays his attorney, and
yeah,
Sam Rockwell is great. I'm going to chime in with other opinions on this movie, but first let's hear from Bill Bregoli, and you tell us what you thought.
I thought also, if we're going to point out actors in this, Kathy Bates is terrific and got herself some nominations.
Yeah, she has been nominated in a couple of things. I thought I won't say phoned it in, but I thought she gave what you would expect as a performance from the mom of the guy that was wrongly accused. Like, yeah. She's from the get-go saying, this is not my son, this is not him, like, this is not his MO. He's like a good kid. He's nice. And the movie shows him as a, like a nice kid who lives with his mom. And you're like, you're never, the problem with the movie is you never, because we're shown the truth, you never go, well, I wonder if this guy did do it. I mean, we're no, it's laid out to be like, he's a victim. He's like, oh, I'm the guy that nobody likes, that everyone thinks is the bad guy. But we know, and this is kind of a problem in the movie, we know that he's not the bad guy. We know that he was wrongly accused.
The bad guy is the media and the FBI. And those characters, played by John Hamm and Olivia Wilde, are, as they say, painted with broad strokes.
Which is why the movie is getting so much, I won't say, well, first of all, as we mentioned earlier, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is suing Warner Brothers and Mr. Eastwood because they say that this is the wrong representation of what really went down. But the truth is, like, you want to root for him, but, like, I think there's a reason nobody's made a Richard Jewell movie until now, which is that you don't really care about him.
What do you think of the movie, Bill Brigoli?
As I said, I like the characterizations of Richard Jewell and his mom and Sam Rockwell, Sam Rockwell's lawyer character, and that they gave some you know, nice little nuances to those characters.
All right.
Well, but the lawyer, I'm sorry, the FBI agent played by John Hamm is, I mean, he could, if he had a mustache, he'd be twirling it.
Yeah, it is really.
Snidely whiplash kind of thing. Well, here's my take on this thing. You know, I understand, first of all, I really admire Clint Eastwood at 89 years old, the fact that he's still directing movies. Let's start out with that one. And he knows how to tell a good story. You know, The Mule, which I thought was underrated, which came out last year. It's a very, you know, if you look at the catalog of Clint Eastwood films, he's a good storyteller.
He's kind of the new Woody Allen. He's old and he works every year. I mean, really. He cranks a movie out a year.
Here's the deal with this. I mean, I understand, as you said, Bill Brigoli, that this guy's life was ruined for many years by the government and the media, you know, and that is gotten across well. But there was something I couldn't emotionally connect with this Richard Jewell character, and the reason I think
because you're a fat shamer.
No, because I think that I knew the outcome. I mean, I remember when this happened, when he went from hero to goat back to like. Well, he didn't really go back to hero, but it kind of just like, you know, years later it comes out that like, okay, yeah, we found the real guy and you're right, exonerated. But
what's good about the movie, if I can give it any credence at all, is that you kind of do go, wait, I don't remember exactly, was this guy guilty, wasn't he? And like, the movie does a good job of making you say, well, yeah, he seems like the usual suspect.
Well, I thought it was an okay movie. It was fine. It just wasn't a great movie. As you said at the beginning of this, it was kind of by the numbers. And for some reason, there are many movies that we see where that are based on real life events where I know the outcome of the movie and it still grabs me. And I go like, gee, I knew what was going to happen, but it still just had me like just on the edge of my seat. And this one, I just didn't really care about the character that much. I don't know. Maybe it's because this guy, you know, as portrayed, I mean, maybe the real Richard Jewell, I don't know, he's kind of an idiot. I mean, you know, he's very dedicated to his job, we're thankful that he saved those people, but he's portrayed as kind of like this, you know, he wants to kiss the FBI's ass.
But, Neil, sometimes if those are the numbers, you say go by the numbers. If those are the numbers, then that's the movie.
What I'm saying is this, is that what was interesting, and they didn't really play up on this enough, and Sam Rockwell fortunately gets him out of this, is he's a patsy. He's being duped. John Hamm, he thinks the FBI is on their side. He's like, you know, John Hamm's like, come on, you'll record that you're guilty. We just need to get like, you know, we just need to hear of your voice. Come on. He goes, yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm a cop like you. So, you know, he's, I don't know. You know, you felt the guy was just kind of like an idiot to an extent. So I don't know. It's not a terrible movie. It's an okay movie. It's a decent movie. I'd recommend
what
it.
What if he
it's
was just, an idiot?
Do you think he was an idiot?
Well, I don't think he was that smart. I mean, look, sometimes that's the story. What I said earlier about if you go by the numbers, but the numbers are there. Like, I think he wasn't the smartest guy on the planet.
Well, he wasn't the brightest.
Which maybe makes him the bad protagonist for a movie.
Maybe.
But
and notice, folks, we're using past tense when we talk about him because he's dead.
Yeah. He died. He actually,
to me, the movie
should I tell this? I mean, he got back into law enforcement. a lot of nice things happened for him. So my point is, well, some nice things. So I'm saying, like, history doesn't always treat the winners well. And this guy really, really didn't place the bomb there, as we all know. And this movie is kind of like, first of all, Olivia Wilde was supposedly this hussy that slept with John Hamm, and that's how she got the story. And now the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is like, hey, we're really happy that a guy like Clint Eastwood wants to make this movie, but you guys fucked up.
Well, anyway, I think the movie comes alive when Sam Rockwell is in the whenever he comes on screen, I think the movie elevates to several levels.
He is the best thing in it.
All right, let's move on. Okay, so Bill McCuddy used to work at Fox News, and the reason I'm bringing that up, well, he didn't do politics, he did entertainment, and it was quite a number of years ago, but the reason I bring that up is during the era that you were there, there's now a movie starring Nicole Kidman as Gretchen Carlson and Charlize Theron as Megyn Kelly, and a fictional character, there's, I guess, a composite of numerous people, women that worked at Fox News, played by Margot Robbie, called Bombshell. And this is the story of the takedown of this is really the Megyn Kelly story. And since you worked at Fox News and you knew these people, you could tell everybody a little bit more about what it's about and your opinion of it and how accurate you think it is. And then Bregoli and I will chime in with our opinions.
Well, it gets a lot of things right. The newsroom looks right, and we talked on the show today, as you mentioned earlier, about
on the TV show,
the Showtime thing that they did called The Loudest Voice with Russell Crowe. And what I would say is that because it had 7 hours to get the story told, spent more time on Roger Ailes, and this spends a lot more time on the women who Roger Ailes wronged. And, you know, since you're asking me because I worked there, I will tell you quite honestly, I never saw any of this or I never heard about any of it. Like, I know that sounds stupid and you can say I'm stupid. Many people have said that on Twitter. But the point is, this was a very well-kept secret within the walls of 1211 Sixth Avenue. This movie is a truncated version of what they did in the Showtime series, and I think it suffers for that reason, for this only because we got to know a lot more about the backstory, about Ailes' wife, Beth Tilson, about the people who were all around Ailes, and how it became this like power place for Roger Ailes to build the number one news and then eventually the number one cable channel. The movie takes a, as you called it today on the show, the television show, you said it's like a Reader's Digest version. Yeah, all movies take books or stories that are much longer and truncate them down to something else. And this is a very well done movie and amusing and entertaining about the women there. But the story is really bigger than that. And I think that's what the Showtime special illuminated.
What do you think, Bregoli?
Yeah, they had to cut everything down. But I was pretty entertained by it, to be honest with you. But I could tell which characters were composites and which weren't.
Yeah.
Like Kate McKinnon's character is also a composite.
Yes, I mean, Kate McKinnon is kind of wasted as a producer who originally befriends the. So you have.
There's a situation between Margot Robbie, who's a fictional character, and Kate McKinnon, who's a fictional character. I won't divulge what that is, but yes. You have limited time to do this.
But
movie,
you liked that, didn't you?
No, I think for a 2-hour movie, you know, and I'm seeing the shortened version of this thing. I don't know what the purpose of that scene, which I'm not going to divulge.
Well, you said today on the television show that, like, you learned a lot more.
Well, here's the
because
thing.
You had 7 hours
on the Loudest Voice, which I think is an unbelievably great miniseries that was on Showtime. 7 parts, 7 hours. I wish I almost saw Bombshell first, because after seeing the 7 hours of The Loudest Voice first of all, I thought Russell Crowe was great, much better than John Lithgow.
He was a better Roger Ailes than John Lithgow.
Right, and I thought that Naomi Watts was a better Gretchen Carlson than Nicole Kidman. But saying that, I understand that The Loudest Voice was the story of Fox News, Roger Ailes, and Gretchen Carlson. It was not really Megyn Kelly is in that whole 7 hours is only briefly in there for like maybe 10, 20 minutes. This is really the Megyn Kelly story. And I will say that I give a lot of credit to the makeup department and Charlize Theron because
she's the same
she,
makeup artist who did Gary Oldman, right. Made him look like Winston Churchill.
Okay, well, it's amazing. She looks, and I read about the fact that they put things on her eyes that you can't see to make it look like Megyn Kelly's eyes.
In this day and age, you could have believed that what they did was CGI. Because they did it on The Irishman. They've done it on other... They did it on the thing with... That horrible thing with Will Smith. Like, you would think that they did something.
But they did not do that.
But they didn't.
Right.
And that's going to hurt her. That's going to hurt... The performance should get more play than it's going to. But she won't win for best actress.
Why? Because it wasn't CGI?
No, because people will watch it and think it is CGI or think that something's what? Been manipulated.
Well, I don't know. Gary Oldman won for Churchill, which
right.
you just
so
heard
maybe.
Brigoli, and that's the same makeup yeah. artist. Listen, I think, as I said, I wish I saw it first. I think it's also too light. You know, the loudest voice had a serious tone to it. This was more like comedic. I think there's a lot of comedic parts.
Which
in
should
this.
Make it more entertaining, but let's
And this is not a funny subject.
Let's
I mean,
talk
sexual
to most
harassment.
Of the people listening to this who haven't seen either one. Well, they obviously haven't seen Bombshell. Like, so we always assume people have seen everything. If you haven't seen either one,
see the loudest
Bombshell.
Voice.
Well, okay, so your advice is see that.
Yeah.
And pay no attention to this or not go to this?
I'd say if you've got 108 minutes to kill, this is a nice short Reader's Digest.
But again, as I said,
but entertaining
this is the
too.
Megyn Kelly story. The other one was the Gretchen Carlson, Roger Ailes
So the
story.
Knock on it is Megyn Kelly doesn't really deserve to be. This is what Lisa Rossman said on the show. Okay,
oh.
Roll your eyes, everybody, collectively. And a lot of people will say this. Like, it doesn't deserve to be a movie about a woman who thinks Santa is white and, like, lost her job at the Today Show. And, like, so... When you pick somebody and make them the focus of the movie as the savior of Fox News or the woman that turned everything around, it really is more Gretchen Carlson, the Nicole Kidman story.
And that's the that's the loudest voice.
Correct. So this focuses more on Megyn Kelly.
But if you're going to do a Megyn Kelly movie, which this is, then give me the whole story. Tell me about when she went to NBC.
No, there's
okay?
a lot of Megyn Kelly.
No,
that's not this story. Yeah, that's not this story.
Well, you know, I don't know. Look, it was okay. I think I would have felt better about it again for the third time had I seen it before I saw The Loudest Voice. But Russell Crowe blew me the fuck away as Roger Ailes. What an amazing – I mean, if this guy doesn't win an Emmy, I mean, he's amazing.
Right.
And then I see John Lithgow, and I'm like, yeah. And all I'm sitting there going
all
like,
I'll say
oh,
in the
gee,
defense,
I wish I
– All I'll not. Say in the defense of this is that this is not the John Lithgow, Roger Ailes story.
No, if, I
this is
that.
About the women. And so I guess they were less concerned – Jay Roach, the director here, and the writers were less concerned about how Roger Ailes came off as opposed to – how the women came off. And this is the girl power story. And the Roger Ailes story in the Showtime special is more about the rise and fall of Roger Ailes.
I'll say this about Jay Roach. Very interesting career as a director. This is the guy who directed this, directed such the Austin Powers movies
right.
and Meet the Parents. But he also did that unbelievable Julianne Moore political movie, Game Change, where she played Sarah Palin. So that's a similar territory to this. So he
Well, it's also the Adam McKay story in the sense that these guys who did comedy want to be taken seriously and they can't help themselves to make it entertaining to also make it a little funny. So the thing that you're saying that this is too funny is what makes it entertaining.
Yeah, and most of the audiences aren't as interested in the inside baseball stuff as you are.
Right.
Yeah, I guess
they
want to
go
true.
Out for an hour and a half and have a good time. And
I thought
will.
It was okay.
I liked it a lot.
I thought it was okay. Anyway.
And thanks for the wine, Charlize.
Moving on, I'm going to talk.
Charlize sent us wine.
Yeah, yes, thank you. But I'll show you the bottle of wine later. I think I got a different bottle of wine. It's
well, let's not open it and drink it now.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think you've had a few drinks, haven't you?
No.
Okay. Well, anyway,
not just a few.
Okay, so here's a movie that I absolutely love that Bill McCuddy and I have put both on our 10 best lists. And I don't know if you saw Uncut Gems.
I was sitting two rows in front of you, remember?
I've seen 30 movies.
We went
you
to
pay
a party
any attention
afterwards
to the people
you complained
with you?
About the hors d'oeuvres.
Right. Well, thank
okay.
you. Well, I've seen 30
you
movies.
You do know you're married to Abby, right? Does this,
I've
has
seen,
this completely
we've all
escaped
seen
you?
30 movies in the last two right. weeks, which is mm. what happens, by mm. the way, to this audience. So I'm going to tell you that they release all these movies – in like a 3-week period, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a living hell. Everyone listening to this goes, oh my God.
It's just if I can't remember who I saw what movie with. But anyway.
And this makes it worse. We go to private screening rooms, and they give us nice meals.
Okay. So this was directed by the Safdie brothers, who are New York filmmakers. And Adam
Sandler. What's the Robert Pattinson movie they did like 2 years ago?
I don't know the name of it, but.
That was really kind of good and down and dirty.
Do you know the name?
These guys know New York. That's my point.
Right. So anyway, so Adam Sandler gives this remarkable performance in a dramatic role that has, I'd say, dark comedic elements to it. And he plays this, let's see how I could say this, a scheming, degenerate, manic, addictive gambler. An adulterer who works in Manhattan's Diamond District on 47th Street.
When you say, let me see how I can say that and then read it off a computer screen, is that the same thing?
No, it's not the same thing. But thanks.
I have it written down here, and I say he has a series of high-stakes bets that could lead to a windfall, but must balance business, family, and adversaries on all sides.
I just have to say that we talked about this on the show today as being the most difficult to watch. My wife got 10 minutes in. Mrs. McCutty gets 10 minutes in, and I go, Sue, this is the best movie, one of the best movies of the year. And she goes, is it? She was like angst from the moment it started, and she goes, does it end well? And I'm not going to give anything away, but it's not the happiest ending. And I go, no. And she goes, well, then turn it off. This is a really, really hard movie to watch.
I love this movie.
Love it too. It's like
sitting with Neil for an hour.
It goes at 150 miles an hour and it just doesn't break for a moment. Adam Sandler gives an incredible performance. He gets in a whole, the addictive gambling component, he gets in a whole lot of trouble, most of it of his own making. And you kind of, the guy is not a likable character, and Adam Sandler does something really hard to do. He makes you root for
even more unlikable.
No,
yeah,
I think
you know what? I'm rooting for this guy, and you're rooting for him, and
I was not.
Bill said you're like, so here's the knock on the film.
And he makes it funny, and it's not
funny.
The knock on the film is that there's nobody to like in this movie, and my thing is, I don't care if I like anybody in a movie. There's this big stigma that everyone talks about, like, well, who do we root for? Sometimes if you take me into a world,
I agree.
If you take me into a world and you do it really well, in this case, 47th Street, and the Safdie brothers' father used to work on 47th Street, and they've had this movie in the back of their minds for like 10 years. If you take me into a world, a place that I've never been before, I happen to have been to 47th Street, but whatever. Like if you take me into a place and immerse me in there, I don't care if I like anybody as long as I think like I'm seeing something I've never seen before, and that's what this movie does.
Yeah, well, I unlike you guys, I was rooting for the guy despite his flaws. I thought he was a very fucked up character, but somehow there was something about him that I was
like a gambler who never wins. You're thinking like, well, I hope he. I hope one of his bets
there's
works.
There's a whole bet scheme thing towards the end, and I was hoping that it was working.
Crazy.
Plus, there's a 10-minute scene which I will not spoil at the end of the movie that involves a bet in a basketball game that. I watch that and I'm thinking Adam Sandler totally deserves an Academy Award.
So let's back up
for this particular thing.
It's based in the year 2010 or 11 when Kevin Garnett, Garnett, really did exist.
Boston
and
Celtics.
He plays himself. He played for the Boston Celtics. And
he's pretty good at playing himself.
No, he's
very convincing.
He's great.
Himself.
He's very good.
Yes.
And it's what's interesting about 47th Street for people who don't know it is that it's one claustrophobic office after another where these guys do nothing but trade diamonds
and
watches
and
like they deal in the minutiae of a carat versus a half a carat versus a 3/4 of a carat, and they make money on the vig of. I can sell you this if and lose money if you'll take this and I can make money. It's a total world that is really, really, really well described in this film.
Also, they're not Catholic.
And they're not. No, it's a lot of Jews.
Well, you know, in this particular movie...
is it too many Jews?
In this particular movie... The whole thing revolves around, how did you describe it, a stone with gems?
Yeah, he's found this, not blood diamonds, but this blood opal.
He doesn't find it.
It's an opal.
He was pursuing it for I've been trying to get this, object for 10 months, and he gets it shipped in there. It's a rock from centuries ago that has all these jewels.
He's going to take it, not to Sotheby's, but at an auction house, and this is going to be his big payday. This is his cash out. Every movie has, whether it's... two cops that just have one more job to do before that one retires. This is like his big payday, and it's really, really well set up. So, and that world, as I said, is completely described, and you're unbelievably drawn into it.
I really love
it. He has a wife, but he has a girlfriend.
But what you're not saying is, the fact is, and you were saying something, it's on your top 10 list.
Oh, absolutely. Right. It's my number three, I think, this year.
And it's on my top 10 list. I love the movie, and you did not like it.
I did not.
Bergoli.
I thought it was very well done, but I'd never watch it again.
Oh, I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah, I would watch it again. With Abby. I want to hear what
I think this
thinks.
Is the kind of movie that my wife would actually not like. It would drive
Well, I said my wife, 10 minutes in, goes, this is making
it's
me
funny.
Crazy.
And we're going to talk about the Critics' Choice Nominations Awards that just came out. But we get all these screenings, as we've said in many previous podcasts, of all this stuff on DVD. And I was going to revisit some of these movies, and I was going to watch this with my wife. And I said to myself, it's funny that you asked that. I said, my wife will not like this movie.
Well, my wife
she's going to go like, she's going to watch this. She's going to go, this is making me crazy. I can't watch this.
I like the Safdie brothers. I like this movie. It's in my top 10, but I will say one knock against it. I don't like the soundtrack. It has a jarring soundtrack that keeps boom,
very discordant.
Boom, almost like Lighthouse, which we've all seen, which is like got this. This has a loud soundtrack.
It's all synthesized.
But didn't you think Sandler's performance? I mean, we're talking about the Water Boy here. This is like a mesmerizing performance by this guy.
Meyerhoff brothers, Meyerowitz stories,
which we'll talk about in a second.
Punch Drunk Love. I mean, the guy can do it.
Or even the one which
funny
is not,
people.
Funny people. He's great. Or the one where he's the chef that.
I hated that.
But it's a good performance.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, he's playing a dramatic role. I mean, he's not yucking it up as Happy Madison. You know, Happy Gilmore or Billy Madison kind of nonsense.
Right.
Anyway. That scene at the end, before we move on, where I was riveted to the screen. I could not look away. It was an incredible performance. He said on Howard Stern, I can't believe I'm not going to win an Oscar for this thing.
Yeah, he has been funny about that. Like, I'll take it.
I've never heard anybody take that approach to it. And Howard Stern goes, that's an interesting
approach. And I didn't like him as much as you did. You say, like, you get to like him. But, like, what happens at the end is, like, heartbreaking.
Well, I love the movie, and it's on both of our top 10 lists, and Bill Bergoli did not like it.
So he's wrong.
All right. So
that's right. Okay.
Let's talk about
my top 10 list.
Let's talk about what is on your
Actually, I haven't drawn up the whole thing, but I want to talk about how I voted for the Critics' Choice
when
the ballot came up.
Sure.
I actually set myself a goal of not voting for any film that cost over $100 million to make or was a superhero movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
I wanted medium budget movies.
So what'd you vote for?
I don't remember. But they were all medium budget movies. I did not. So you can.
I'm looking at the best picture for Broadcast Film Critics Association.
And
I can tell you that at least half are low budget movies, I think.
Yeah, half. But
Well,
we all vote in this thing called the Critics' Choice Awards, which are in January and are getting more and more important every year. Our colleague Roger Friedman, who does Showbiz 411, says that it's probably now at this point, this many years along, the best indicator for the Oscars.
Well, they've always said that. Joey Berlin.
Well, of course, we've always said it, but now outsiders are going, well, maybe this is the list.
A lot of the things that I voted for did get nominated. One of and the usual suspects, I mean, we knew Marriage Story and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would get nominated, you know, but there were things that I voted for that I know that you voted for, Bill McCuddy, that I was happy that did get voted for. One of them, and I don't know if you voted for this one, was Cynthia Erivo for Harriet. She got a nomination for Best Actress.
Yeah, who listen to this podcast know that I was unimpressed with that movie, but I thought her performance was good.
I voted for her. I was glad. I don't know if I had a part because there's 200 and some odd members, but if my vote put
her... No, it was all you, Neil.
Well, I was happy about that. I did, as I said previously, vote for Julianne Moore to get nominated for Gloria Bell. She did not get
nominated.
That
didn't happen. I did that, too.
You know, and that got kind of shut out, you know. And the Golden Globe nominations came out today. In our organization, both Eddie Murphy and Adam Sandler got nominations for Best Actor, where Adam Sandler got shut out of the Golden Globe nominations. But in our organization, they both did get nominated. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, we'll devote an entire show to this. when, as well as to the Oscar predictions. But, you know, there's usual suspects. You knew Renee Zellweger was going to get a nomination, and you knew Adam Driver was going to get a nomination for Marriage Story, as opposed to the other 15 movies that he was in this year. Right. You know, and they didn't
One of which is The Report, which Annette Bening did get nominated in many places for, but, like, I think is a very ordinary movie.
I'm not thrilled with that movie. We talked about that in a previous show. Right. I thought that it was boring. I think Dark Waters, which covers similar territory, and I saw them like 2 days apart from each other.
Although that hasn't gotten a lot of love either.
No, it really has not. It really has not. But, you know, we'll see what happens with the Critics' Choice. I'm going to, unless you want to add some more things to the Critics' Choice Awards.
No, why make this long?
All right, I'm going to move on to the third season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Now, here's the deal. Okay, I loved the first season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. If you're not familiar with The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, it's on Amazon Prime, and Rachel Brosnahan plays this woman who's kind of a pioneer in stand-up comedy for a woman. It's loosely based on Joan Rivers and a couple of other female
Toadie Fields
and a couple of other – but they say a lot of it is Joan Rivers. And in the first season, she's the typical, you know, New York housewife who has no aspirations to have any career whatsoever. And her husband wants to be a stand-up comic. And he's doing Bob Newhart's material in a shitty comedy club in the village somewhere. And they don't want him on stage. And she goes on one night and just starts ranting and raving in a funny way about how fucked up her marriage is. And she somehow, over the course of episodes, decides to take up this unheard-of thing of being a woman in stand-up comedy in the late 1950s.
Right.
I thought it was a – and she strikes up a friendship with Lenny Bruce. The actor who plays Lenny Bruce is fabulous. And I thought it was a great first season. Second season I hated. Second season went off of the main topic, which was following this one. Diane Palladino was the creator of the show and the writer and director of many of the episodes. And they went off topic. And for most of the show, they concentrated on her parents who go to Paris, which was, I thought – two or three wasted episodes, and then they go to the Catskill,
Mountains.
Well, having gone to the Catskills, I found it to be actually not only unrealistic, but actually kind of like my wife also felt it was kind of like stereotypical and offensive. And the last episode of the second season.
Well, wait, let me stop you. A lot of people think this whole series is stereotypical and offensive.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Okay, so the last episode of the second season was great because it went back to its original focus, which was Jane Lynch is in it, and she was another comic preventing Mrs. Maisel, played by Rachel Brosnahan, from – they had a row and it prevented her from getting good spots. And she does a telethon in the second season and she's on at 2 in the morning. And that – which is a graveyard slot and she does well. And anyway, the last episode of the second season was good and I was kind of like, all right, I'll watch the third season and – 90% of it is back onto where it was the first season. It's about following the, she goes on the road. She's an opening act for this entertainer.
Well, you ignored the best thing about the whole series, which is her relationship with this
Alex Borstein, her agent.
Her agent, Susie, yes. Who's this woman
Alex Borstein won the Emmy.
Constantly mistaken for a guy, including a very funny sequence in this season, the third season, where she's at an army base and a colonel or a general or a, no, like a sergeant goes, hey, you should consider joining up because he thinks he's a guy.
Well, that happened. You're only four seasons. I've seen the whole season.
Okay, no one likes a braggart.
No, but that comes up again where she's – it's a running gag. Okay. It comes up again.
Well, it's been a running gag for the whole 3 years.
But, you know, Alex Borstein, who plays Susie, her agent, is extremely talented. She's the voice – if you watch Family Guy, she's the voice of the wife on Family Guy.
She was also on Mad
TV. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Like a man, she played this
Asian
very,
character,
very funny Asian.
But she played many characters on that, and that's an underrated show, by the way. Mad TV pushed the envelope more than Saturday Night Live.
Long gone, so thanks for that push.
But no, it's on YouTube. You can watch it. But anyway, I loved this third season. It totally redeemed itself from the debacle that was the second season.
So tell people, she goes on the road.
She's an opening act for this guy that I think is kind of like. I wouldn't say Marvin Gaye because that was later. This takes place in 1960.
This is more like
Jackie Wilson.
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, and
black,
she's
singer,
yeah,
popular.
And he
crosses over to white audiences.
Right. So at the end of the second season, even though she gets this 2 a.m. slot, this guy, Shy Baldwin sees this because entertainers are up late and sees this and says, I want you to go on tour with me. And she opens up. They tour and they go in Vegas. There's a whole bunch of episodes where she's in Vegas, which is great. She's used to playing these little clubs downtown, and now she's in Vegas, and nobody's listening. They're clanging glasses.
Her first night out is
and
really
they're like,
funny.
You know, Selma, sit down. We're sitting over here. Nobody's listening to her.
Right.
It's
well, what
just
people need
great.
To understand is like somebody like Shy Baldwin, like
says, I like you, you're good, come out and open for me. But there's no expectation for that. It's like, you're the comic.
You're just filler.
Filling time, you're warming up the room. It doesn't matter whether anybody's paying attention. As long as they know, oh, now there's a show up on the stage, and then you come out and perform in the case of Shia Baldwin.
And it's also, you know, as I said in my example, it's designed for people to come in and get their seats so they're not late and do all that. And there's just probably would be better with music because, you know, music is
but
comic.
Better than,
you got to listen to like
better than Shia Baldwin is his manager played by in just this season, Sterling K. Brown, who's like
from
in
this is
fucking
us.
Everything. This Is Us. He's in Frozen 2.
He was in that O.J. Simpson American Crime Story.
Yeah, he's like incredibly talented. I had the opportunity to talk to him the other night at a party and
he's
like,
such a
I'm
great
so
actor.
Blessed. He goes, I've been doing this for 20 years. He goes, the last 4 years have been amazing, but I'm not an overnight sensation.
Well,
I've been doing this.
When he won his first Emmy for that O.J. thing, he actually got up and in his acceptance speech goes, I know everybody at
Nobody's
home has
heard of
no idea who I am. Yeah. But yeah, because he really was a Christopher Darden. I think that was who he played.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great. He's great in everything.
Well, this thing, he's a hard ass that doesn't listen to any bullshit and doesn't think anything matters except his client. Which, and he totally played 100% push. And he's really, really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. So I love the show.
We got you back.
Yeah, you got
you're
me
back.
You got me back. Tony Shalhoub is in it.
I can call Rachel and Tony and tell them you're finally enjoying it again.
It's quite good. I'm sorry that I binge watched it, you know, and to use you were asking about my wife thinking that this was offensive. She was actually offended by some of these stereotypical portrayals in the series in the past seasons and kind of dumped out of it because of that and started watching this third season with me because I was like kind of like trepidatious. I'm like, I don't know, I'll give it a shot. And then she's totally in. She goes, I love it now. It's great.
Okay, so for fans of it that are on board and go, yes, we like third season too and we've been watching it since day one and thanks for that long, proactive description of something we already know.
Yeah.
Where does it go? So what happens to Midge?
Apparently, Diane Palladino has said that she knows how the series from day one is going to end. And I think I read some things where I think the series ends, and this is just speculation because I read this like a long time ago, that she kills on Johnny Carson or something like that.
I have a really sad ending for it.
It could
I'm
be Jack
propose.
Parr.
Yeah, me too. She takes a plane ride with a bunch of musicians.
No, that doesn't happen. She doesn't die. She doesn't go down with the big bopper.
Bye-bye, Miss American Pie.
I'll tell you what I think could happen because she – I'm not giving too much away.
She reunites with her husband.
Well, she definitely has reunited with her husband a couple of times.
That's the end of the series.
And he's opening a club that maybe she will perform in. What am I saying? Of course she will.
Well, she does if you keep watching more episodes.
I don't like – to say this because Lisa Rossman will kill me, but I have an interesting ending for this show, which is that, and I don't know whether they can do this or not, and people who are fans of it can disagree with me, and that's fine. I have a feeling it's possible that this thing could end with her going back to her family. So I know it's based on Joan Rivers. But they keep saying, no, it's not really Joan Rivers. It's so-and-so-and-so. It's a conglomerate. It's some
Diane
other
Palladino
character.
Said,
I'm telling you, possibly.
I know the way Lost, and I can't believe I wasted 5 years.
The way a Neil Simon play starts and ends at the same place, I think it's completely conceivable that she goes back to her family life. She has 2 kids at home. That maybe it comes full circle
and she's back to
being an Upper West Side.
We're going to have to wait 3 or 4 more years because they're going to do about 7 seasons of this thing.
I'm thrilled for that,
but,
by the way.
But, you know, Diane Palladino has gone on record as saying, as I was saying.
She knows how it ends,
but
she could know it ends
the
like
TV
my way.
The TV series Lost, which I wasted many years watching, and that finale was just nothing really paid off. But, the whole thing took place in Purgatory. Wowee. So that explains it. But
don't spoil
it. But that was the end of Lost.
I know.
But the creator of that said, I knew from when I created it what the final shot would be. Diane Palladino said, I know what the last 4 words the series will, of the character, the last 4 words.
Thank you and good night.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. People have been tweeting, what are the last 4 words? Like, people keep coming up with, what are the last 4 words? But we're many years away from
that. Yes, we are. But I'm saying that, like, if your expectation as an audience is that it's going to end with her being Joan Rivers, it's conceivable that the makers of this show would go, no, we want to do something different. And she realizes her family is more important than her career.
I got it.
She might end
it. How about this for the last four all words? Right. And now, here's Johnny. Maybe that's it. And she comes and then, you know she's going to kill because you've seen her kill on numerous sets. That's the end. Who knows?
That's not
the all right, end. Anyway.
Spoiler alert. It's on. Not going to end that
so
way.
There's more?
Yeah, so Bill McCuddy convinced me to watch a movie, which I watched with my wife. My wife's getting a lot of play on this podcast last night called Queen and Slim. Take it away, Bill McCuddy, since you made me watch this.
This is the black Bokeem, he says it in the movie, the black Bonnie and Clyde. Basically, a couple goes out on a first date, and it goes – here's how badly it goes. They kill a white cop. It's two African-American, very likable characters – who get pulled over wrongfully, and there's a struggle, and it is self-defense, and the cop dies, and then this woman who is very strong is an attorney and goes, you know what?
They're on a date.
We're
these
dead.
These people are on a date. They just met earlier. Not even an hour.
Yeah.
They met for a drink for like 20
minutes. She says, I only called you like a Tinder date. And she goes, I only called you because I was having a bad day.
Yeah, exactly.
So they decide after shooting this cop or after the cop is shot, she talks him into convincingly. I thought not convincingly at first, but then I realized, yes, that we've shot a we're in Ohio, we've shot a black a white cop, and
we're going to get the electric chair.
We're electric chairs. So we have only one choice, which is to go on the run, which seems inconceivable for about 5 seconds. And then they start on this journey, and the video, because there's a dash cam from the cop's car, goes viral. And everybody in the country many people in the country start to go, wait, these guys are okay. Let's like not hunt them down and kill them.
Right, there's this protest, just like the way there were protests for, and forgive me, I can't remember the guy's name in real life.
O.J. Simpson?
No, this was the guy that was shot by a cop, or an African-American guy.
In New York.
One of many.
Yeah, so... And there was a body cam on it. We were able to see it. Or the guy with the hoodie that got shot unnecessarily. All these things. So there's an actual video of this thing. Mm-hmm. And when you watch this thing unfold, you sympathize with these guys. I mean, there's a nice couple and they're taking around. The cop is being...
It's a bad pullover.
The cop is being a complete asshole. Right. He's like, get out of the car, get in the ground. He goes like, can I ask you why? And it's freezing cold outside. Right. And the guy goes, gee... can you hurry it up a little? Goes, why? Because I'm cold. And that like triggers the guy off. And he's like, now I'm really going to, So then he pulls his gun out. I mean, if you watch this, the cop, these people were doing nothing wrong. And the cop completely was the instigator in this whole situation.
All I can say is that every time you go, gee, shouldn't they have done this? And they do the other thing. It's believable. It's my number three movie of the year. And the reason is because it's easily one of the best road pictures that's been Dirty Harry and Crazy Larry, all those movies going back 50 years. This is a beautifully shot, well acted, and completely believable. And this is important because you're at many points in the movie, you're going to go, why don't they just turn themselves in? They're innocent.
Here's a couple of things. First of all,
We'll settle for one thing.
The Hate U Give, which came out last year.
Horrible movie.
Where this is the opposite, where the black kid is victimized for no reason at all. And these people actually, like you said, self-defense. There's also, we're seeing so many movies, as I mentioned. I just see this movie, Just Mercy.
We all feel your pain.
Just Mercy. No, I'm not complaining. Which is a great movie. Have you seen Just Mercy yet?
No.
Okay, so there's these people. Jamie Foxx is in it. We'll review it on another show. And so is Michael B. Jordan, and so is Brie Larson. And here are these people that are sitting, black prisoners that are sitting, other minority prisoners that are sitting on death row, and I believe it's Alabama, that are completely innocent. And they want to retry these people. Look at the evidence. There's no way that, and the white juries are, no, we're not retrying this thing. So after having seen this, and then you see Queen and Slim, and the lawyer goes, there's no way we're going to get a fair trial. We're going to get...
So it informs their trip. You're like, okay, yes,
but
run,
here's my thing.
Run,
here's
run.
My thing. And I said this watching the movie. Mm-hmm. Since they're on every... They're wanted posters.
They do get, yeah, I know what you're going to say.
They're everywhere. Their faces, yeah. everywhere. Everybody recognizes them. Why don't they split up? If they're looking for two funny. People that's on the, funny. If they're looking
that's
for.
That's so funny. I said that to my wife. I go, if they're I looking go, for two I go, there's no the, movie, but I'll tell you what they should do. They should split up. And my wife goes, you're crazy. No.
No, that's not a good movie if they split up.
Of
but
course.
But since they don't know each other for more than 20 minutes.
Right.
I mean, it's not like.
And the cops are looking for a black couple. Don't be a black couple.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Or at least when you're driving, one of you hide in the trunk or one of you hide down in the crawl space or just, whatever. Look,
they have no ties to each other.
That's not the movie, Neil.
They should have split up immediately and then they would be less of a you know obvious target, you know?
Why don't we run everything
next time
in
you
Hollywood?
Shoot a cop, Neil.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, I like, despite this, I like the movie a lot. I mean,
it's not in your top 10, though, is it? It's in my top 10. It's not in your top 10.
I haven't done my top 10.
No, we're all on the edge of our seats.
I don't think it would wind up in my top 10, but it's a, but it would be like, you know, when you're reading these titles, honorable mentions, it would certainly be an honorable mention.
When we all,
and it might make my top 10.
Our whole career, we talk about undiscovered gems, and this is a movie that could easily get swept away, and we're both saying you need to see it.
Nobody's talking about this movie in award season, though. It's kind of interesting. Well, and the actor from Get Out, his name is...
Daniel Laleo or Laleo?
Laleo.
Yeah. Okay. He's great.
Yeah.
And
she's great.
She's both
British.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah. And... even a lot of the characters that they meet throughout their Bonnie and Clyde run.
Right.
She has an uncle, and then there's a guy that's like a, you know, I got a guy in Florida, you know, I serve.
Well,
time.
They become heroes.
All these people.
So people help them that they don't expect are going to help them.
But all
and
the performances are terrific, you know. Yeah. I mean, along the way, all the people they meet.
I will say my wife goes, where's the roadblock? They're out of Savannah. They're going to – where's the – there is a slight movie – thing, which is that they never get pulled
over. You
got
to buy into it.
Yeah, you got to
buy
into it.
Well, you got to buy into why did they stay together? They don't really know each other.
Right, right.
So, all right. Anyway, what's next week on the podcast?
Well, I just want to say one thing before we do that.
Yes.
So there's a thing that's happened. I was asked to watch this movie called Song of Names, which you're a big fan of.
It opens Christmas Day.
We'll talk about that next week. But what I do want to talk about, and Judd Apatow has been talking about, that's annoying, is that we live in a different world than people listening to this, and we get links to movies. And Sony is not going to be happy when I say this, but Sony sent me a link to this movie, as they have sent me many links to many movies. And this year, and I don't know why they're doing it, they have allowed you to watch the movie at one time the speed, which is its regular speed,
Judd
or one and a quarter, or one and a half times speed, up to four times speed. And I will tell you, since you like, I don't want to give too much away.
We're
going to
do
like
a whole song in
you stuff. Like that more than I did. But I did, out of curiosity, click it up to one and a quarter, one and a half, one and a...
That's no way to watch.
And
movie.
Of course, it's no way to watch a movie. First of all, filmmakers wouldn't watch it. Wouldn't want us watching them on.
And you, as,
on,
as who has a side gig as a stand-up comedian, you're a stand-up comic. You know how important timing
yes,
is.
Yes, but many audiences who've watched me have wished it would go faster.
Yeah, but but that's funny. But joke aside, come on, you know to pause a beat.
No, Sony shouldn't be doing this. Shouldn't be doing this. There's a way, but Sony is smart. They go, there's a lot of movies that people have to watch. A lot of them are old people. They think movies are too long. Believe me, every Academy voter I talk to thinks every movie is too long.
Let me tell you something.
So, but I just want to finish the point. You can click up to four times. And I'm telling you, when I clicked up to four times, I couldn't understand a fucking thing that anybody was saying.
Well, you shouldn't be clicking up to four times.
Of course I
shouldn't. But here's the thing.
No one should.
The publicist on the Song of Names insisted. Here's a story. I'm out in the Hamptons during the Hampton Film Festival, and I ran into the publicist and the director of The Song of Names.
Uh-huh.
And that publicist said, I have tickets.
Was that at the Hampton Film Festival?
Yes.
So
and
I
said,
sorry,
I
didn't
said,
see
I,
it there.
I said, he says, can you come tonight? And I think I was seeing Ford versus Ferrari that mm-hmm. night. And I said,
much
no.
better movie.
And I said, very different kind of movie. And I said, no. And
better
let me
meaning
tell you
much
something.
Better.
I promised them that I would see the movie.
Right.
So,
and like many of your lies to publicists.
No, as a few months go by, and the publicist calls me out and he says, you promised. And I said, I did. So I went to a screening of this movie, and I said, I am so glad that I saw this movie on a big screen with the surround set, you know.
Okay, we're
the
starting to get into
hold on,
we don't want to do
Lisa Rossman saw it also in a screening on a big screen, and both of us really liked the movie. You saw it on a link.
You liked it more than she
and
did.
David Fear saw it on a link. Right. And it is not the way to see this particular movie. Well, there is an immersion factor.
We shouldn't be seeing any movies on links.
But this is a movie that you need to be totally immersed in that movie. The cinematography, the sound.
There's nothing exceptional about the cinematography. I'm not going to
get
into...
Well, you saw it 4x speed on a computer.
No, I didn't. I know you love this movie and I respect you. You're a buddy of mine for 25 years and I know you like this movie more than me. Of course I didn't watch it at 4x. I clicked up to 4x to see what that looked like and then immediately went,
I have a question for Neil. So, what speed would you watch The Irishman at?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a whole discussion. We will review the Song of Names in a week or two, but what are we talking about next week?
Next week, a movie called Cats. It's about the owners of a Jewish deli. And then we have...
That's the funniest thing that's been said ever on this podcast.
Yeah.
That's right. Then we have Star Wars, The Rise of My Blood Pressure.
Henny Youngman, ladies and gentlemen.
We're going to see that. By the way, has anybody been invited to Cats?
Yes.
Yes.
Conversation... the Golden Globes have come out. Our own Broadcast Film Critics Association has come out.
They screened it too late for that.
Everything has come out and nothing for Cats.
Cats was not screened for voters.
I guarantee you
for us.
That the Golden Globes saw it. I guarantee you.
Well, they did, yeah.
And it got nothing today.
No. Well, Star Wars doesn't care about awards. They know they're not getting awards except from some technical stuff. And that's being shown to the first... That has not been shown to anybody yet, to my knowledge. So we're doing Star Wars, we're doing Cats. Yeah, what else?
Well, if we want to talk about movies coming out on Christmas.
Wait a minute, I just want to ask, Billy Dee Williams swings both ways. Do you find him attractive, Neil? In any way? Because he's available, apparently.
I think he said that he was gender fluid or something like that.
No, then he retracted it.
He retracted it?
Yeah, he did.
Why did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did.
Why did he retract it?
He said that they got him out of contact.
Right. No kidding.
Also that's coming out is Little Women. That's
we love
we'll do Cats, Star Wars,
Little Women,
1917, and some other stuff.
Yeah, and some other stuff.
And
you'll digress.
All right. So anyway, what do we do on this podcast every week, Bill McCuddy?
We watch the really lousy movies until your wife walks into the apartment.
Who I've talked about extensively on the podcast.
Yes, actually, we should explain. Neil's wife just walked in. We're doing this at Neil's house. And she was talked about many, many times.
Times in this podcast.
She exists, folks.
And now
she
never listens to the podcast. Neil's to hear what I said, she's going to have to listen to the podcast. Wow. And you could all listen to our podcast.
I wouldn't ask her to do that. It's too painful.
Thank you for sitting around talking movies with us. And we'll sit around talking movies with you again next week. And before I go, if the sound quality of this sounds weird to you, it is because our regular equipment went missing for the day, and we're doing this off an iPhone. So if we get any...
Can Apple please give us a couple of bucks?
Yes, so if this sounds strange to you, our regular...
We're looking for sponsors.
Normal quality will return next week, but Bill Bregoli is such a genius with this, I bet you don't even notice the difference. Who knows?
Well, when we say normal quality, we'll return next week. We don't mean in the banter. Right. It's only in the text.
Anyway, all right, we'll speak to you next week.